This is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell-Newton on WCRS 98.3, 102.1.
And this is Bob Fitrakis from the rear, the Carriage House at 1021 East Broad Street, here with my cohort Connie Goodell-Newton. And
today we have with us in the studio director Kaveh Nabadian and actor Prak Rado. And they're bringing us the film Vapor.
Well, at least Kaveh is. I think Prak is in a different film we'll hear about in a minute.
Okay.
But
great.
Tell us a lot of something about Vapor.
So Vapor is a film about an older man in Mexico City who comes out of the closet. It's a film that's told without any dialogue. I tried to kind of give a really impressionistic view of what it might feel like to finally kind of release yourself from the mask that he'd been carrying with him for 60 years. And it's based on a true story.
So it's a silent film?
It's not a silent film. It's got a ton of sound. I'm actually a musician as well. So it's got a lot of... basically, the main theme, both visually and sonically, was to really work with the ideas of tension and release. So there's a lot of sounds of... You know, Mexico City is the biggest city in the world, so there's a lot of noise, and then there's also a lot of the idea that in a place like that, you can also feel very solitary. So there's some moments of pure silence, and then lots of very layered, dense sound and music. And it's all kind of based also on Mozart's Lacrimosa, which is from Mozart's Requiem. And so that's kind of the thematic thread of the film.
Okay, having been to Mexico on human rights and other issues, and having been particularly with the Mexican-American community here, I found in many cases people that Mexican men that were bisexual, very macho, but in private appeared to be bisexual, but would never, ever come out of the closet. And I don't know if that's still the case in Mexico, but it seemed to be a certain amount of denial, or in some cases, is that you couldn't do anything that was feminine. If you were engaged in some homosexual activity, it had to be as a male and in the male role, not the female role. Did you run across any of that, explore any of that, or is this one individual who's... I mean, why do you come out? Why did he come out when he was older? Usually you'd think that that decision would be made by someone young and defiant.
Well, those are a couple of good questions there. I think to answer your first question, I lived in the Zona Rosa, which is kind of the gay district of Mexico, and there's definitely a very... You know, there's like a very kind of flaming gay population, but it's very, very small. And so if you're not willing to become a part of that population, then you're going to be kind of scared to come out, because once you're out in Mexico, you're very limited in the kind of work you can get and socially it's you're very marginalized. I think the reason this guy came out was that he had just retired and he'd been living with it for long enough, and he figured he had nothing left to lose. And I think there's something very... definitely something very brave about coming out, because it's also in that society he came from, an kind of upper class, middle upper class background. So to come out in front of his family and everything is a huge deal. But I think something just kind of clicked for him, and he decided he was going to come out. And the way he came out was in a kind of a big way. He went and got photos taken of himself for a erotic men's magazine, a gay men's magazine. And then, I mean, the denouement of the whole thing is that after he got the photos taken, he went to a bathhouse and had sex with a younger guy, and then he was in the jacuzzi after he had a heart attack and died. So it was kind of like this ultimate release that happened the same day as the day that he kind of came out in this big way. So when I heard that story, it blew my mind that all these things happen in this kind of conjuncture.
So it's actually a true story?
Yep. Yeah, it's a true story. As if a friend of mine is an actor, and she had been giving him acting classes kind of in secret, and because he was starting to explore different things. So he started acting and in these little theater thing. Well, never actually in the theater, but just taking acting classes and hiding it from his family. And so she became kind of his confidant. And then he said he was going to do this thing, and he was really excited about it. And then finally, he did this thing. And then the same day, it was almost like his soul was finally allowed out of its cage, and it could move on to the next thing. But there's a million different ways you could interpret that guy's story, and I think that's part of what's really interesting. It's not like a pro-gay or anti-gay or anything. It's just like, this is something that happened to a guy.
What was his life like before? What did he retire from?
Well, he retired from working at the Treasury. So he was an accountant, really pretty boring job working at the, you know, for the government in Mexico City. And kind of not, I don't think he worked that much, actually, especially towards the end. And he was being, he got a lot of money from his family, and his family always knew, his family was always trying to, you know, push women on him, and he would never get married, and he'd never really do the right thing. And so, yeah, I mean, he was kind of like just a lost guy for a long time.
Well, that's really cool to hear about a movie that talks about so many intersections of different identities and how that can impact a person. It sounds like there are some also some themes of like class intersecting with like a GBLT identity, and also just the cultural aspect, I think, is probably interesting for people in Columbus to see a GBLT movie about a man in Mexico. So.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, to me it's interesting. One of the signs usually of a free society is a measurement of tolerance towards other sexual orientations, right? It's, as soon as, you know, it was considered a great breakthrough when there was actually a gay cafe in China. But to some extent, you're saying it's still fairly rigid in Mexico, which is part of the North American Free Trade Zone, is that people seem to be restricted if you adopt a gay identity. I would imagine there's a normal sequence as there is throughout most of the world in terms of, you know, sexual practices, but a lot of those are hidden or underground.
Well, I think, I mean, I'm definitely no expert on the LGBT community in Mexico. This is based on this one story and the time I spent living there. But I mean, I think there's probably parts of middle America that are still pretty rigid too, right?
You know, absolutely,
like,
yeah.
Including Ohio.
Yeah, well, there you go. And
there are places that
we voted in Ohio to outlaw gay marriage, and all the votes came from places that there's no open gay institutions.
Right, of course. Yeah, exactly. And so Mexico City, it's definitely much better than it would have been, you know, say 50 years ago, but it also still has a long ways to go. And I mean, the thing is, in a lot of Latin culture, it totally depends. That's maybe not true, but Mexico is a particularly macho culture. And so in places where those gender roles are super defined, like in Mexico, if you're going to go outside of these classical gender definitions, then you're going to risk a lot of alienation, I think.
When I've read some other books, and there's like literary theory and stuff, they would, you know, one theory about like a storyline like this could be that the character is actually being punished for being gay, depending on like who the writer was. You know, if you see a certain character, like, you know, maybe a woman who tries to do things outside of her gender roles, a lot of times in literature, those women are punished pretty severely. So this is a true story, so it's not really the case, and it sounds like you have like a positive take on things, but some people looking at the movie from a negative point of view could see that the character is being like punished in some way because he dies after he does a homosexual act. But on the other hand, it seems also like what you're saying is that the culture is so repressive that
they killed him.
That it was a huge release, and so I totally, you know, get that and feel that. And if a culture is so repressive, where, you know, you can't express who you really are or your gender preference your whole entire life, and you're always in hiding, then it, I mean, that would be stressful in a way, you know.
And it would kill you, and it may kill your soul.
Yeah.
but I like the idea of release. I think that sounds like a great theme.
Well, yeah, I think it's the idea that it's his soul had been maybe kind of dying for a lot of years, and his soul is kind of represented by this child in the movie. And at the end, it's like you see the child kind of go off somewhere else. But it's interesting that you say that. I've been surprised that I haven't gotten more comments like that, or that it hasn't been perceived that way by more people. I was kind of worried about it. Mm-hmm. And when I was editing it, I was trying to really make sure that it wouldn't come across as him being punished. But I mean, some people probably, you know, really homophobic people are going to look at it that way.
Yeah.
But also the way I edited it, I decided not to finish with the death. I decided to finish it with the photography session, which is kind of this moment where he's being freed. So it definitely ends on, I think, an uplifting note, even if you know that after that he ended up dying.
And how do you interpret the music? How does that play in? Does that essentially stress the release as opposed to the punishment?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the Lacrimosa is so heavy. You know, the Mozart's Requiem, the whole piece is just so massive and rich. But I think, and I can't remember, you know, it's in Latin. Anyway, the words of the Requiem also talk about some kind of punishment, but then talk about being released, and it kind of fit perfectly, you know.
But the punishment could be that he denied his essential nature.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And the whole, you know, if you see it, he's kind of constantly confronting this child soul, you know, figure that represents kind of the moment where he realized, let's say, that he was gay and chose not to act on it, you know. So it was like the moment where he kind of went away from who he really was, and he got further and further and further away. And it's like, you know, you put enough stress on that, and then suddenly you release all that stress, and it comes back. It's like he re-meets his soul at the end, and then finally, by re-meeting who he really is, that allows him to move on to like somewhere better for him, you know.
Is that flamboyant community protected? Is it sort of institutionalized? These are special people that we tolerate and we don't gay bash, but it's inherently isolating and deviant?
I think it's kind of isolating. I think people are very, you know, you're definitely marginalized as a gay person in Mexico in a certain way, from what I've seen. But compared to, I also was in Honduras recently shooting a documentary about, in Tegucigalpa, actually about fear. And my translator and the guy I was working with, they're amazing guys, super nice. And both of them are people who gay bash. And they would tell me things about the stuff that they did. And it's like, I can't reconcile these you people who are such good people with me to the fact that you guys do this. And this is just so totally normal. And there's like almost like this institutionalized violence in Honduras. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you see that. And then Mexico seems like super, super progressive.
So right? When you say gay bashing, do you mean actually like physical violence?
Yeah, I mean like in Tegucigalpa, like, there's a very, very small out gay community, and it's very flamboyant. As often, you know, the people who are willing to be out in a community like that, and yeah, these guys would go down there with sticks and beat them up.
So actual bashing, because I think, you know, I think around here when we say gay bashing, we mean speech a lot of times.
No, this was violence. And the first time is me and this Quebecois assistant of mine, you know, we were having this nice time, and then they start telling us about this, and we're just like, and they were proud of it, and they thought it was funny, and we're like, I don't know how to explain this to you, but I don't see this at all the same way. And I think by the time we left, you know, I play in a band and the drummer's gay and they really like the band. And so I was like, well, if you like the band, then it means you like the drummer. And if you like the drummer, it means that you're okay with gay people. And it's like this little step towards them opening up a little bit. But it was really shocking and kind of scary to me to see. I mean, it's also just a country that has so much violence against it, and so much just like institutionalized violence from the government and from the gangs and everything. So it's kind of like everyone's taking out their violence on whoever they can. And so it's like whoever's lower on the feeding chain gets the violence taken out on them, I think.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we definitely seem to have a problem with violence in our schools here in, like, Ohio. There's a lot of bullying. There have been a lot of, like, teen suicides that are related to gay bashing, whether I guess that's verbal or physical. And definitely, I'd say definitely, especially in high schools, it probably takes a physical turn a lot of times. So,
in the movie we're talking about, Vapor can be seen at the Columbus International Film and Video Festival, the oldest film festival in North America.
Thank you. This has been Kaveh Nabadian with us, the director of Vapor, and this is Fight Back with Bob Fetrakis and Connie Goodell-Newton on WCRS 98.3, 102.1.
Is there a website the listeners can go to?
Yeah, you can check out my website at kavehnabadian.com.
You might want to spell that.
KAVEHNABATIAN.com.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys.
It was great talking to you about your film. And next, it looks like we have Prak, who starred in another movie that's being showcased at the Columbus International Film and Video Festival. And I like the concept a lot because it seems so American. And Prak, let me try to summarize this for you. A Albanian immigrant comes to the United States,
yes,
to pursue his dream as an actor.
Yep.
Runs into immigration problems and is then forced to...
Well, immigration is really like a big issue right now, as we all know, and there's a lot of steps you follow to kind of get your case. And yeah, like after all this, like the steps are done, pretty much you get deportation.
So you have to become a go-go dancer to pay his lawyer, which in many ways are worse than the loan sharks.
Yeah.
Okay, I couldn't help but notice you're an Albanian immigrant. You were the actor in this film.
Yeah, Dreaming American is a dramatic film, which is based on my life. And
so it was based literally on your life.
Cool. Well, it has some elements added to it, so you can make it...
You've gone Hollywood on this or Bollywood? Yeah, you got the dramatic license. I'm trying to think, is that... what do you mean dreaming American? What is this American dream you were dreaming of?
Well, I came here to pursue my dreams as an actor. And I did everything what's right. Like, I didn't do anything against the law or anything. I just came here and went to school. And as the success came on my way, then I found myself up against the immigration system, which they didn't want to.
Now, how old were you when you came here?
I was 19.
19. How is the acting community in Albania? Is it possible to make a living as an actor in Albania?
No, actually, there is very limited. It's a small country, so it's very hard to make anything happen there.
So, so you came here, I guess, for school and to pursue your acting career.
Yes.
And then you came up, like your character in the movie, came up against an uncaring immigration bureaucracy.
Yeah.
So how were you able to work with your experiences to transform that into a theatrical work? And how did that feel for you?
Well, playing actually the role based on my life was really harder than I expected, because it's still a character, just like any play or a movie, but this one was like all the emotions and the memories were very, very real. It was like living those dark days over again. So,
Is it possible to almost be a caricature of yourself? Did you have to restrain yourself? Because really, probably a lot of the movie was the more intense stuff, right? So, and yeah. In real life, there's the boredom and the despair that go with that.
Can you ask that again?
Yeah, no. It's sort of, when you're playing yourself, did it feel real? Or was it sort of...
Yeah, it was very, very real for me, which was like it was like impossible to play it, because you kind of like, you know, once you pass those dark days, you kind of like just want to pass them and leave them. But when you have to go back and live those dark days again, it's kind of hard.
So that caused you any trauma to...
Actually, there is one scene that it's really emotional now for me. When I see the movie, I can't really watch that scene. It's one part where we wrote in the movie, because I know a lot of friends and families that are here, like for years, and they never get to see their family, or their family can die, they can never go to see them and stuff like that. So there is one scene where when Giancarlo Esposito, which is a really amazing actor, he's asking me, oh, it's a scene where I can't, where I say I can't go to see my mom without papers. And at that time, my mom was alive. And I just lost my mom 4 months ago. So that scene just kind of like, it's very touching for me.
So how did you get in the country? Was it a tourist student visa and it just expired, or?
I came here as a student visa.
Okay, and you just decided to stay and pursue acting?
Yes.
And what was it like? How did immigration get a hold of you?
Well, it's not like get a hold of you. Like, you have a case and you pursue your... The
did
stages
they come to
that
your
goes
house
to?
And serve notice on you? Did they
well,
pick you up in a roundup?
So as you were a student and then you tried to stay.
Yeah.
You tried to stay longer, right? And
exactly.
So
then.
It's just really difficult because there's like a lot of paperwork and
exactly. then
annoying
you, like,
stuff, and you can't go back and see your family and stuff. So.
Yeah, the same thing goes with so many other people out here. So I just got lucky that I got to meet Lee Percy, and he became interested. He was very moved by the story. Then hopefully my story can help other illegal immigrants out here that are in the same situation.
So are you here legally now?
Actually, I got the papers through Dreaming American.
Ah, great. Yeah. Good. So so what happens in the movie? Just a little bit of the plot without giving too much away, if you don't want to.
What happens in the movie? Well, the film is based on a true story. Like, this young Albanian actor, he comes here in New York and he does everything right. And as the success comes by him, then he finds himself up against the immigration system. Mm-hmm. And what we were trying to do with this film, we just wanted to show the real side of the immigration system, like how bad it is. Because you do see a lot of movies out there and you don't really get it how... unless you're an immigrant for yourself, you don't really get how hard it is, you know, like what goes on behind that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it seems like in immigration situations now, people can get detained for indefinite periods of time if they're not able to go back to their home country and they're not allowed to be in the United States. So people get people get lost in the system sometimes.
Yes, exactly. And it takes forever. It takes years to kind of like even hear from them. Like, I was waiting for my case for 5 years just to have a court date.
Yeah.
And we go to that court and they deny your case, then you have to file other steps. And it just takes years and years and years. And
appeals.
Yeah, exactly. It's like it's just
evidentiary stuff.
Lawyers and so much money to pay those people. And sometimes you find the right ones, sometimes you find the wrong ones. A lot of times I was just like, it just gets so expensive.
Yeah.
Crazy expensive.
Now, did you help with the dialogue in the film at all? I mean, since it was based on your life, how much input did you have on the script?
Well, when I wrote the story that I gave it to Lee Percy, which is the director of Dreaming American, he got the story, then he got his own friends and
scriptwriter.
Yeah, then he rewrote it on his way.
Did you ever say?
He's like, no, he told me
that. I wouldn't have said that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But no, he's amazing. He's just so, so incredible and so smart and so talented. And just like,
well, some of the promotions suggest that there's sort of wit in parts of it are funny and entertaining. How'd that work out? I mean, because it seems... Is it the ending that's upbeat, or just some of the stuff's absurd in dealing with immigration?
Well, like the language, for example. It's funny, you say one word for something else and totally means something else. I was in one audition, and instead of saying I got here late, I said I got here late. Like, I just got laid. You know, everyone was like making fun of me, but actually I didn't understand like till like 5-10 minutes later. I was like, oh, did I really say that? Like, I didn't know. And I was saying that to the casting director.
Yeah, you're in good company, because in a very famous incident, Gerald Ford went to Poland and said he loved the Polish people, but he loved them essentially. He said he screwed them. It was love in the carnal sense, not love in I love you. So We went to Jimmy Carter. We actually got native translators that understood the various nuances of love.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, how many festivals have this been in? Columbus is, how's that fit into this?
Oh, Columbus is just amazing. I heard it's going to, like, 59. It's the oldest.
It's the oldest film festival. Yeah, in
it's amazing.
America.
I'm so excited to be here. And Suzanne, she's amazing. And I was very happy.
Have you done other festivals?
Yeah, we were in Palm Spring, which is a really well attended festival. And also, we were at Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival just last week, and there have been lots of other ones, but not as big as this one.
What was the response there?
They really like it. They liked it a lot, actually. They always wanted to see more of it, so we're working towards the longer version.
Great.
So,
well, what do you mean the longer? How long is this?
It'll be a feature film.
Yeah.
So,
it looks like this one's 24 minutes.
It's 24 minutes right now. Yeah.
Great. And it also looks like you have a website, dreamingamerican.com.
Yes.
So for people who want to see a trailer or
absolutely,
what else is on
absolutely, they can
on
go
the,
on...
okay, so
they can,
information.
Yeah, if they go to dreamingamerican.com, they can see the trailer, they can read the synopsis, and they can see who worked in the film. It was like 50 people. So it was like being a feature film, really.
When you were in Albania growing up, did you actually dream of coming to America?
It was funny. No, really, I wasn't. Like, no, I didn't dream about that, because when I was growing up, the country was closed. We weren't allowed to go or come. In Albania. Exactly, and Verhoja just closed us in there.
It was a really, really restricted, kind of the North Korea of Europe.
It was
very, very close country.
Unpleasant.
It's, you know, it's good to feel like you can follow your dreams and do what you want, you know. I have also have dreams of working abroad, and, you know, there are certain things that I want to do in my life and my career that I feel like I could never do in the United States. So I'm glad that you got that opportunity to come here and be an actor and do what you want in life. I think that's just, that's great. And I hope that I will get to do the same and also, you know, spend time abroad following my dreams as well.
Well, I hope so. I hope. Yeah. And thank you so much for you guys to have me here. It means a lot. And
all right, Dreaming American. So the new dream is to make it feature length, with 120, 190 minutes.
It'll be like probably 9.5.
And are there DVDs? Are you planning on coming out with DVDs or distribution?
Well, eventually it's going to become, you know, you'll see it near theaters, near your house somewhere.
Good. Well, that is fabulous. And so the Columbus International Film and Video Festival, it's going on this weekend. So I hope everybody listening will get a chance to come out and see Dreaming American and the other films, Vapor. And so we've been very privileged to have as our guest today Prek Rado with Dreaming American and Kaveh Nabadian, the director of Vapor. So,
and the Columbus Institute for Contemporary Journalism actually sponsors an award in the festival, and we get a film. What's the film coming up for us? What date is that?
Tuesday,
November 22nd. You'll see a film about politics from the Columbus Institute for Contemporary Journalism, which sponsors this show and the website freepress.org. Connie, by the way, is a board member.
So what's the name of that film? Do you remember?
Priceless. Which, shockingly, is about the buying of American politics.
No way.
Which is part of the American dream for many American politicians. I'll get elected to Congress, and then I'll get rich.
Well, is it any wonder that the Free Press is helping put that out?
Sponsor it.
This is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell-Newton on WCRS 98.3, 102.1.
Check out Dreaming America.
Oh, thank you. Thank you guys for having me here. Thank you so much.
All right, you're welcome.